Stay tuned for a message from Facebook after the show.
So later today, I'm heading to Wilmington, Delaware.
Former Vice President Joe Biden will not be traveling to Milwaukee, a battleground state, Wisconsin, due to concerns over COVID-19.
Where Joe Biden will be speaking on Thursday, Kamala Harris speaking on Wednesday.
Instead, Biden will accept the nomination from Delaware.
It's going to mainly be reporters and probably campaign aides and, you know, maybe family or something, but it'll probably look a lot like if you watched the Biden-Harris announcement last week.
Now let me introduce to you, for the first time, your next Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris.
There were definite moments where it seemed like, okay, that's a line where if there was a crowd in here, they'd be applauding, and it's just silence.
Kamala, floor is yours.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. Okay, hold your applause, hold your applause. Maybe they should try out this whole sound effect thing. It feels pretty good. Maybe one more time. Okay, this is Politico Dispatch. And today, Natasha Kurecki on a convention unlike any other.
Party conventions are typically seen as being very important for the party. It's the biggest gathering that you're going to have in 4 years.
Thank you all very, very much. Thank
you. These are moments that people are really paying close attention to. They remember different moments in history. It is a chance to put your stars on a national platform, your rising stars. You know, one of the most cited examples, of course, is Barack Obama.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely.
You know, a young Barack Obama getting a big speaking slot, and he's just a, you know, freshman senator from Illinois.
From Washington to Maine, the people will rise up in November, and this country will reclaim its promise. And out of this long political darkness, a brighter day will come. Thank you very much, everybody. God bless you. Thank you.
He wowed people so much that it launched him. So it is an opportunity to really rally the base. I mean, that's kind of the point of it. But this is just completely turned on its head. And it's going to be like nothing we've ever seen before.
Yeah, how does these insanely unusual circumstances, how does it change a convention? I mean, a lot of it's not going to be live. There's going to be no audience. How awkward is this going to be?
You know, you lose a lot, right? I mean, you don't hear the roar of the crowd. You're not going to hear the laughter or the applauding or the shots of people jumping to their feet and the most, you know, iconic moment of the balloon drop. It just takes away from that. But the combination of no crowd, this happening virtually across the country in different places, and, you know, the fact that there are going to be recorded speeches, it's hard to see how it's going to move people.
Conventions are usually a time for energizing the party, and right now, a postal service-shaped cloud is hanging over national politics right now.
Dire warning from the U.S. Postal Service that could affect tens of millions of voters. The post office telling most of the states that it cannot guarantee delivery of the expected crush of mail-in ballots in time for Election Day counting. It comes as Congress and the White House are at a stalemate over a coronavirus relief bill, which would include billions in funding for the post office.
Do you think that's going to be a big focus at the convention this week, or do Democrats run the risk of having their convention overshadowed by a major political fight like this?
I don't know that they run the risk of having it overshadowed. I mean, it certainly is coming to a head right now with the Postal Service. I do think that Democrats will try to seize the opportunity here. And when you're trying to plead your case publicly and you're grasping for different examples, I mean, this is unfolding in real time as the convention's happening. I think that Democrats are going to try to capitalize that as much as possible. I mean, they're already going to point to, you know, protests on the streets. They're going to point to Trump's handling of the coronavirus. And they're obviously going to point to the Postal Service and what is happening in real time. And I think it's just going to underscore it even more so just because it's happening right now.
We choose hope over fear. We, Americans, choose unity over division. We Democrats choose science over fiction.
Is there an overarching message that you expect to see from the party and from Biden and Harris? I mean, during the primary, Biden positioned himself as the more moderate unity candidate. Do you think that's how he's going to try to position himself and the party this week?
I do think that. I think what we're hearing already is that they are pushing unity, unity. There will be a moment for AOC. There will be the Bernie Sanders moment. Of course, you have John Kasich. So talk about a complete spectrum of ideological beliefs and personalities. And I think that's what Biden and his candidacy has always been about. He's trying to say, look, I can unify Democrats. I can unify the country. And here's his moment to prove that. And he will point to all these steps he's taken, including bringing Bernie Sanders into the fold. And Sanders enthusiastically backing him. This was an issue we saw in 2016. You know, there was so much division after the bitter fight of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, and you had a lot of Sanders people staying home. And Democrats knew that. They know that now. They know that every second of the day. And they're trying to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Next week, we have the Republican National Convention, the RNC. It was supposed to be in Charlotte, North Carolina, then switched to Jacksonville. Now President Trump is planning to give his speech from the White House. How do you expect to see things play out differently there? And what do you expect to be the message in response from Republicans?
I think the interesting thing about Republicans, of course, is that because they tried to stick to their plan of holding an in-person convention for so long, you know, it got moved and then it got shut down again. They're scrambling more because they don't have the time to plan out all these virtual events. I mean, it takes a lot of coordination and a lot of planning and a lot of making sure that everything is going to run smoothly. That's a challenge for Republicans. Trump in the White House, I mean, he has a platform like none other. And of course, it's incredibly controversial. Some would say it's a complete violation of using the White House to further your political purposes. And we're hearing a lot of that pushback already from Democrats. Expect that to be central to the discussion for the next couple of weeks.
Natasha Kurecki, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Also today, as tensions mount over the future of the U.S. Postal Service during an election year with an unprecedented number of mail-in ballots, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is calling the House back into session for a vote as early as Saturday on a proposal to block the Trump administration's plan for overhauling the USPS. This is weeks earlier than Pelosi and House Democratic leaders had originally planned to return to Washington. Democrats have grown increasingly alarmed that Trump is using the coronavirus pandemic to force service cutbacks at USPS ahead of November. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy claims Democrats are trying to focus on the Postal Service's problems because they weren't able to reach a deal with the White House over a new coronavirus relief package, saying, quote, "Republicans are 100% committed to ensuring a fair and accurate election." Democrats, though, allege Trump's head of the Postal Service, Louis DeJoy, has overseen substantial operational changes to the agency that has led to backlogs and service interruptions and are demanding he appear before a congressional committee next week. And the Trump administration is ramping up pressure on TikTok. President Trump issued an executive order on Friday giving ByteDance, which is the Chinese parent company of the video sharing app, 90 days to divest its U.S. operations. The order comes just a week after Trump issued a directive prohibiting transactions with the company by late September. It also comes as giants like Microsoft are vying to purchase TikTok, and the move adds pressure on ByteDance to find a buyer. The order echoes previous accusations from the Trump administration that TikTok's Chinese ownership exposes Americans to a risk of data theft or propaganda from Beijing, and comes as Trump himself now has a verified account on TikTok rival Triller. In a statement, ByteDance said, quote, TikTok is loved by 100 million Americans because it is a home for entertainment, self-expression, and connection. And they're committed to continuing to bring joy to families and meaningful careers to those who create on the platform for many years to come. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And to stay up on all the latest coverage of the coronavirus pandemic, sign up for the Politico Nightly Newsletter, which comes to your inbox every evening, and Politico Pulse, our healthcare newsletter, out every morning. You can find both at politico.com/newsletters. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
In preparation for the U.S. elections, we've taken critical steps at Facebook to secure our platforms and provide transparency. We've more than tripled our safety and security teams to 35,000 people, implemented five-step ad verification, and launched a new voting information center. Learn more at how we're preparing at fb.com/about/elections. That's fb.com/about/elections.